San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. You can get us via an app if you look up It's Your Money and Your Life. And we're heard also on 760KFMB.com. And now it's time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a philanthropist. He's an accomplished marathon runner. And he is a family office expert advising several high net worth families. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous as always, Joe.
Well, we got another VIP show coming up tonight.
We always have VIP shows, but this one is an extra VIP show.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I did want to say the Padres finishing strong, and
for what? Finishing strong
not,
for what? Jim?
They're not in the playoffs. But any preliminary announcements before we get into
tonight's show?
I did attend Jason Kruger's presentation this week, and it was really great. Jason and Ryan, who we had on last week's Sellhorn, and they were just outstanding.
The folks who present with him are just as sharp as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. All the just the high tech gurus and marketing geniuses and anything you wanted to know.
So if you want your business to run better, these are your people.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about Signature Analytics when we thank our sponsors.
So, I shall do that.
Well, let's get right into the show because we do have a magnificent guest tonight. And probably I just say his name, you'll know exactly who we're talking about. But if you ever watched any of the Star Trek TV programs or films, we have as our guest tonight the CEO of Roddenberry Enterprises, the son of Gene Roddenberry. We have Rod Roddenberry, and he's here in studio. He's beaming in right now.
Where's the effect?
I hear it.
Where's the effect? There it is. Hey, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Just beaming in right there. There he is.
Okay. Oh, there he is. Hey, Rod.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
He just materialized, right? I came out of nowhere. But anyway, well, we've... full disclosure, I don't think we've told the audience yet about the film. Did we talk about the film?
We mentioned that we were showing the documentary over at Qualcomm a few months ago.
Well, July 8th.
And we did.
Yeah, July 8th.
It was really cool.
Rod was gracious enough to come down and in that audience, and I didn't have time that night because the audience wouldn't leave, and I wanted to thank everybody for coming. But Paul Jacobs, Irwin Jacobs, Joan Jacobs all were there, and about 500 other people. And Rod, I just want to thank you for doing that with us. It was just a terrific, I'll never forget it. It was just a great day.
So. Well, you were one of the main ones who put it together, so thank you to you.
Right. But, I mean, you accepted the invitation and were gracious enough. But it was... I thought the whole evening was just spectacular, and we could probably talk a lot about the same things we discussed that night, two nights. But anyway, just tell us about, you know, your life growing up, typical, I don't know how typical, because you're actually a gracious, nice person, you know, originating from the Hollywood community, but then we've all heard enough nightmares, but... but anyway, what was it like, start at the beginning, did you grow up in Bel Air or Hollywood or in?
I actually did grow up in Beverly Hills, but it seems I'm 40 years old. I'm old, but not that old. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it was a different place back then, or at least it didn't have the reputation that it has today. It was certainly for the wealthy, I guess that reputation stood. But in terms of the Hollywood children that come out of there today, I'm not saying they're all the stereotype, but right. I grew up privileged, very fortunate. But of course, at that time, Star Trek wasn't the huge success that it was today. It definitely had its fans.
You were born in 74.
74, right. It was in syndication, yes. And that's when it was just starting to get popular.
Yeah.
So by no means did I have it rough, mm-hmm. but, my parents were, working to make a living, mm-hmm. and to provide, an education for their child.
Mm-hmm. But your father did many things before his Hollywood career, right?
Yeah, why don't we get it?
He did. He had an incredible history. Yeah, history.
This guy, well, if you get the film Trek Nation, folks, you'll see what we're talking about. But he started out as a pilot, a fighter pilot.
A bomber pilot in World War II. Yeah. He flew something like 78 missions over Guadalcanal.
Okay. Right.
It was pretty incredible. I mean, he was a World War II bomber pilot. This man saw... people live and die. And his job was to, sadly, kill the enemy.
Yeah. Well, where did he grow up? What part of the country was he from?
El Paso, Texas.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, and he actually grew up somewhat Baptist, or maybe mm-hmm. I should say very Baptist, mm-hmm. but early on, there's a great article, and I'll try to find it for you guys, where, you know, he started to question the idea of religion. Mm. And, you know, he ended up being more of a humanist in the end, and mm-hmm. Dare I say atheist, but more of a humanist believing in humanity. But his parents pushed him into the realm of religion,
well,
and he fought back.
It happens a lot in Texas, I guess.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
And the Bible Belt, you know, they don't call it Bible Belt for nothing. But then there was some... a story that he was kind of sickly as a teen for a while, which, and he got into reading all these books about adventurers and great adventures. And I don't know if he was actually bedridden and watching the film. And I think in the bonus track, somebody said that, but Horatio Hornblower mm-hmm. and Robert Louis Stevenson. And we kind of discussed at Qualcomm that night that maybe that planted the seeds for, you know,
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's foolish to say this, but his entire history planted the seed for Star Trek. I mean, growing up from reading all the books and, mm-hmm. and comic books when he was younger, I even heard a great story from his brother once that my father used to cover himself in a cardboard box and pretend he was in a plane or a rocket ship. Mm. He was very imaginative as a child and was so always taking these books, you know, and imagining new ways to sort of experience life.
And then he fell in love with the written word and the mm-hmm. spoken word. And then when did he really start writing? Did he start as a teen or?
Well, after World War II, after being a bomber pilot, he got a job working for Pan American Airways and flew transcontinental flights from New York to Johannesburg. And actually, even once was on he was deadheading on a flight that crashed in the Syrian desert, and more than half the people died.
And
he was one of the ones who helped rescue a lot of the people.
Wow.
But then he hung up his wings, so to speak, and became a sergeant in the LAPD. And that's when he started to see this new medium out there, this television, and seeing what the shows, Dragnet and right. Have Gun Will Travel and those stories. And he kind of looked at those and said, man, I could do this. And I think in his own words, he said, I could do better than this.
Wasn't he like, he's getting stories from the other cops on the force at LAPD and splitting whatever writing fee he would get with them for giving them some police stories and selling them to Dragnet, isn't that?
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it. Dragnet and those types of shows were going
to I loved Dragnet when I was a kid. I'm older than you.
Yeah.
But it was a great show.
I wonder, so he became from an airplane pilot to a cop. I mean, it's unbelievable transition, but I think... The other situation or thing I heard that he wanted to move to, you know, get on the LAPD so he can be in the filmmaking or TV biz industry area, right?
Yeah. Well, see, I've heard a lot of different stories there, I've found the truth in the middle somewhere. But I've got a real funny story for you that I've heard numerous times that my father, while he was a motorcycle officer, he was also trying to sell scripts. And at one point, he had a meeting with some executives. And so he you know, it was his lunch break. So he rode his motorcycle to the building. He parked in front. He took off his motorcycle jacket. He put on his business coat. He went inside and, you know, he leaned over the desk at these executives sitting around. It's pitching his story. And he realized that he had all of their attention. And there wasn't a peep coming from one of them. He then realized that his holstered gun was leaning over, showing. They could yeah. see his weapon. So that's just one of those stories that I have heard often. So I'm not sure where the truth is on that one, but I find it very, very amusing.
It was Al Capone who said, a smile yeah. can get you far, but a smile and a gun can get you everything. Yeah. So anyway.
So your dad was a big guy, wasn't he? How tall?
6'3".
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he probably had a pretty imposing presence. So.
Yeah.
But, well, that's an interesting deal. So, obviously, he endeared himself to a lot of people in the industry and created Star Trek. A lot of people don't realize the first pilot wasn't Shatner.
Jeffrey Hunter.
Yeah. So, is that online or somewhere? Can people
You can get it almost anywhere these days. And can you get it on Netflix now? I know you can get all the Star Trek shows. I'm not sure if you can get the actual Cage, but it's relatively easy to find.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it's called The Cage. It's a phenomenal episode.
And then the network rejected that one and said recast it, and we'll do another one, which probably doesn't happen all that often, right?
No. They I've heard that it's one of the only times in history, or at least one of the first times in history, that mm-hmm. a studio shelled out the money back then
yeah.
for a pilot episode, and then gave that another chance.
And of course, they went to Broadway to get this guy named William Shatner, who was a very accomplished Broadway actor at the time. So he was pretty already had a reputation, right?
Yeah.
And of course, Leonard Nimoy, which I think he went to Boston College, my alma mater, Richard. I don't know if you knew, but I was going to the library once, and I think the class of '52. I think I saw Leonard Nimoy, so I'm going to have to double check on that. So. But anyway, do we have to take our break now, Eric? Look, we got to take our break. We're going to come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life and Rod Roddenberry right after this. So beam yourself a cup of coffee and come on back. All right, we're riding back into the studio here, and we've got the CEO of Roddenberry Enterprises, Rod Roddenberry. Welcome back, Rod. So where do we last leave off? We were talking about your dad. Well, where did we leave off, Richard?
Well, I want to ask you, wasn't just your mother was on the show too, right?
Yeah, she was actually
the
in
pilot,
the cage.
Yes.
Yeah, the pilot.
They made
her
second in command back in, this would have been 64, I believe.
Okay.
And so they put a female second in command. And another charming story that I've heard over and over is that after they shot the pilot, the cage, they had the Vulcan, who was actually green at the time, even though it was black and white. It's green skin, pointy ears, pointy eyebrows. And they had a woman second in command. And I think the executives apparently came to my father and said, listen, you can have one or the other.
Okay.
And of course, my father said, well, you know, we're gonna keep the Vulcan and I'll marry the woman. So.
Isn't it something back there, the rules of television? I mean, you know, if you had a scene in a bedroom, you had to have one foot on the floor, and you could never show a roll of toilet paper, all kinds of
things. No belly buttons either.
No belly buttons?
And yet they would smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, right. How
unreal.
Foolish, huh?
Unreal. But so anyway, look, Star Trek, had a lot of support among the student community and science community and highly professional people, but... the network, for some reason, kept putting it in a bad time slot, and the fans saved it once, and then by the third year, the network, I guess your dad got kind of mad because they moved it in a worse time slot.
Yeah, I think 9 p.m. on a Friday or 10 p.m. on a Friday, which they knew their audience was really the young kids. It was the forward thinkers. It was the next generation, and it was during Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was definitely these younger people who were more open-minded, who were willing to consider these sort of new ideas.
And, of course, a lot was going on in the country in terms of riots and all kind of demonstrations and assassinations and every other darn thing. But so then after the 3 years, the show kind of went on the shelf for a little bit of a while.
Yeah.
And then it really caught on in syndication, right, in the 70s. So now it's playing five nights a week in a lot of markets across the country.
And that's when everyone finally gets to watch it. And that's when the buzz kept going. And that's when the fans really started fighting for it more and more.
Of course, now if there's only 69 episodes, I mean, you can run through those in a kind of a hurry. But I guess people are really, you know, watching reruns and loving them even more, right?
Well, remember, there was very little on TV back then, and there was nothing else even remotely like it. You know, any sci-fi back then was somewhat absurd in you know, by today's standards.
No, you're
there was My Favorite Martian, but
yeah, a lot of people.
I'm just kidding. That wasn't really sci-fi. No, when I was growing up, we only had three TV channels.
We only had three. We had ABC, so. CBS, and NBC, and PBS, and then
we didn't have PBS. We had three channels.
Really, you only had three?
Well,
you were out in Ramona in the boonies, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we didn't have a lot of options.
So obviously there was more focus. You can get higher ratings back then easier because they're just slim pickings, but. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it caught on in the 70s, and then what came first, the first TV, next iteration of TV series, or was there when did the first film happen?
It was the movie, the motion picture. So they had been toying around with actually doing something called Star Trek Phase 2, which was another TV series. It was essentially the next generation before the next generation. But simultaneously, and again, these are stories that I've heard throughout the years, not simultaneously, but around the same time, Star Wars, the movie came out. And people at Paramount, you know, quickly said, hey, don't we have something that we can come out with our own movie? So right as they were developing Star Trek Phase 2, they shifted gears and went into the movie.
Mm.
And they brought my father back into it and said, hey, would you do the next movie? And of course, he was more than willing.
Mm.
But he did not do the movie that they were hoping for. He did not do a Star Wars, as everyone out there knows.
Hmm.
The motion picture was, you know, dare to say it was more 2001 A Space Odyssey than it was Star Wars.
Hmm.
So
creating all these, you know, characters that are alien-like and whatnot. So
what if we sent a probe out there and it got, mm-hmm. you know, mixed up with some alien technological life form and came back with artificial intelligence? And I mean, the idea is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It's a slow-moving movie, but it's something to be appreciated.
Was your dad into, I mean, obviously, you know, you see all these spectacular numbers about how many billions of stars and galaxies are out there, and we're just this little piece of dust, essentially, in the universe. Did he ever, you know, ruminate as to what was out there and other life in the universe? And he must have gotten into a lot of this stuff, right?
Well, I got to say, you know, he certainly did. I mean, that was really Carl Sagan. Strangely enough,
Were they friends, by the way? Or?
I'm sure they met. I did not know. My father, so he passed away when I was 17. Mm-hmm. And I had a great boyhood life with him, but I became a preteen teenager and got rebellious. He became mm-hmm. busy with Next Generation. Mm-hmm. So we were at odds for mm-hmm. most of that time until he died. So we didn't have those intellectual conversations mm-hmm. Around that time. So, you know, most of what I'm telling you is from scripts I've read, interviews I've read, interviews I've seen, or people that I've met.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I learned a tremendous amount about the cosmos from none other than Carl Sagan.
Mm.
And then the rest of it I learned from reading my father's materials.
So. Gotcha. Okay, well, let's see then. So when the first film was released, when? In late 70s, early
80s? 1979 was the motion picture.
And then he worked on that one, and he worked on, I think, two or three more before he passed, right?
He did. There was a lot of contention. There was a lot of issues with him and the feature side of Paramount mm-hmm. with the second, third, and fourth movie.
Hmm.
Because, you know, the kind of stories that he always did were, I feel like I'm saying it wrong if I say too intellectual, but they were true sci-fi ideas. Yeah. They were more for novels or more for television, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Features, what was expected then, and even today, they need to be fast-moving,
they want,
have a decent amount of action, and they need to have a beginning, middle, and end that's all summed up, you know, within a two-hour period.
It was sort of an epic feel.
It was. Yeah, it really was. And that didn't appeal to a lot of the market out there.
Well, all the explosions and killing, and your dad wasn't into it. Matter of fact, he didn't want any killing, I don't think. I'm not sure.
He'd seen it. People ask, where did Star Trek come from? And that's where we started this today. And, you know, I think his life experience, he'd been the World War II pilot. He'd seen people die. He'd been sent out to kill people. He was a cop. He'd seen ugly things there. He saw the worst of humanity and the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gave him tremendous perspective on the kind of humanity that we should be one day.
Yeah. Boy, there's certainly enough blood and guts out there, not to mention these video games and whatnot. Have you guys ventured into the video game sphere at all, by the way? Or?
We haven't. We've toyed around with the ideas. You know, at Roddenberry Entertainment, we try to really stay true to the Roddenberry philosophy, as we call it. So we want things to be, we want them to have ethics. We want them to, you know, the audience to come away with something different at the end, a new perspective, at least willing to consider a new idea. I am not against action or shoot 'em up games.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, you have to pull those. You have to have your child watch those or play with those in the right environment at the right time.
Yeah.
And
well, there's some doctor now who thinks for every hour that a child's going to be on a computer or a video game, they have to go outside and play for 1 hour. So he wants to do a one-for-one trade. Because
I think it's a great idea.
Importance of the physical activity and a healthy diet. I mean, we've talked about on this show many, many times.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't matter what you're doing on the computer. The point is you're sitting down. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, exercise the body, but always exercise the mind. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So those first 69 episodes ballooned into 728 or so TV episodes,
yeah,
right?
I don't know how many hours now. It's crazy. It's crazy, yeah.
And then you're on your, 13th or 14th film now? What's the next one that comes out? It's going to be, 14?
I think it's going to be 11, 12, 13. Is it 13 now? I think 13
George
is the next
Takei
one.
Didn't
I
even
wrong?
Know
I
when we talked wrong. To him.
Yeah, George didn't know, you're right.
It's hard. I would have to stop this recording and actually count on my fingers.
So I was trying to just, by way of comparison, I don't think there's been anything on television that's ever ballooned into something like this. I mean, by comparison, is there anything else?
Nothing like this. I know James Bond just had their 50-year, I think, anniversary.
But did he start as a TV show? I don't think so.
No, definitely nothing like this.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live's been around for, 30 years, something like that?
Yeah.
But nothing has been exactly like this.
Yeah, it's really an incredible, just captivated imagination. You must have a lot of global appeal. You get a lot of, is it universal in terms of, Asia and Middle East and everything in Europe? trip.
It is. There are definitely hot spots. You know, Germany is a hot spot for Star Trek. The fans out there are voracious and fun and don't make any apologies for it. They just love it. They have some great conventions. The Japanese love it as well.
Do you go to a lot of the conventions?
I hate to section out countries, but this is what I've noticed in certain places.
You go to a lot of the conventions?
I don't go to a lot of the conventions. Okay. I used to, but I don't. I'm not a huge celebrity. I'm the son of Gene Roddenberry, and I'm doing my own thing. I'm carrying on the name in my own way. But I am not a celebrity that you see on TV. Therefore, people don't bring me out to a lot of places, which is good. I like time with my family.
Well, you had some experience in filmmaking, and I guess you got a taste of that and realized it wasn't compatible with your nature. You're right.
I am not cut out for traditional Hollywood television or film. It is a cutthroat industry. There are many cutthroat industries out there. I'm a little too naive. I'm a little too much of a handshake. I'll take you at your word kind of guy. And that's
it's just like the radio business.
And that's just not the way the world works in a lot of these cases. And you know what? I don't have the spine for it. I'm not better than it. I'm incredibly flawed, but I'm just not good at it.
And I'll tell you, they are so worried about liability. If you ever want to pitch an idea to a studio, I mean, you got to go through a jillion lawyers, or then you need an agent. They won't take if you submit something unsolicited. My God, they'll send the gendarme after you or whatever. And yet somehow it seems to work. I mean, there's a lot of talent and a lot of good product that comes out.
Well, you know what I love today is that, you know, with technology, Hollywood used to be so incestuous. Everyone you were the son of, or your
niece,
dad knew the uncle, whatever. Yeah. Everyone was involved there. No one outside of Hollywood really got a chance. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you've got people from all over the country, if not all over the world, producing their own content at fairly high caliber. There's some fan groups who are doing tremendous Star Trek episodes. Mm-hmm. Star Trek Continues is phenomenal. It is a fan-done show. They can't make any money on it, but I guarantee the writers have written great stories that I think are on par with the original series.
And there's probably a lot of shorts out there. And, of course, with all the video content available online. But anyway, this is great. We'll be back right after New Sports and Weather with Rod Roddenberry right after this. Hang on. All right, we are back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, the award-winning show. Now over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you to our tremendous team of sponsors, Michael Caronta and Drew Freitas with UBS. Couldn't do it without you folks. Right across the street, Prospect Street in downtown La Jolla, from UBS is the best business bank in San Diego. That would be Regents Bank with Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett, our good buddy, last week's guest, his partner, Ryan Selhorn, but Jason Kruger and Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in San Diego, helping business owners improve the operations of their business by getting more talent in that doesn't have to be full-time. It's a great concept. Geiger Law Office is Brenda Geiger, practicing estate planning as well as asset protection. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito, Don Epic, CPA. They made it through the September 15th deadline alive, and now they got October 15th, and they're going to do just great there too. Joel Grushkin, Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow with some big, big numbers in some cases that I can't talk about in public. But it's great stuff. My good buddy Carl Sheeler, just had breakfast with him up in San Juan Capistrano the other day. Berkeley Research Group, best business valuation firm on the planet, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and finding ways to reduce those risks and therefore improve the values of those businesses. Going to throw in a shout out to PopX Graphics and Courtney Lover. Does a tremendous job on our website. And also want to throw one more shout out in there, a big old happy birthday to Eric Rubalcava, our engineer. Just turned 26. Oh, to be 26 again. I'm more than two 26s, and that's depressing when I say it that way. Happy birthday, Eric. So anyway, Joe.
Yes, sir.
We've got some great sponsors. How do people find out about our great
sponsors? Well, they just get on their smartphone or computer, get their cursor over to iymoney.com. There's a sponsor tab up top in the drop-down menu, and all their information is there, including Jason Kruger in that great presentation this week.
You went to that, right?
I did, and I really learned
good
a
stuff.
Lot. Anybody who... anybody who's running a business who needs some good advice, even in the high-tech sphere or anything accounting-wise or CFO-wise.
Yeah, Jason and Ryan are amazing. Their whole team, they've grown from about 4 people to about 15 here. Yeah, just doing a great job. Hey, Rod, question about diversity. You know, the characters on the show Star Trek are extremely diverse group. Did your father actually practice that, or did you see that in his daily life, what was behind that?
No, absolutely. I can't tell you exactly what was behind that, except for his life experience, the fact that he had traveled so much and seen so much in the world and seen good from so many different people, ethnicities, etc. But he definitely did practice that. I never really saw my father discriminate against anyone. And he had friends of all ethnicities, social economic backgrounds, persuasions,
etc. Any with pointed ears, or was...
Well, it's fine. Someone would say he might have had deals with the devil sometimes, you know, it depends on how you define the devil.
But the show is ahead of its time in terms of presenting different cultures, different people, different colors.
Mm-hmm. Well, when William Shatner kisses, Nichelle Nichols, right, my God. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's that always...
Well, and African-American female on the bridge, in 66, that's not something that people... Yeah, in fact... DC Fontana, one of the writers, gave a great story once where there were stations in the South who would write in and said, "We're not going to show your show if you have an African American on the bridge." Mm-hmm. And my father's response was
"Blank them, don't show it."
Blank off, you know. He said, "Fine, you know, don't show it." I love that story.
But anyway, so let's get back to your child a little bit. You grew up, did you go to Hollywood High or where did you?
No, I fairly privileged. So I did go to private boarding school, elementary and high schools, yeah.
So you got a great education, obviously. So
well, I had the opportunity for a great education. What I did with it may not have been as fruitful.
Well, you're pretty sharp, I would have to say. But so your dad passes away at the memorial. You hear someone read a letter about from a gentleman who was wheelchair bound, and an inspiration that program was to him, and who went on and I think had a family and everything. And that was kind of a life changing moment for you, right?
It really was. You know, I was pretty oblivious. I was pretty much in the dark. You know, the shows I liked back then. You know, and we're talking the age 16, 17, obviously. Mm-hmm. Knight Rider, Starsky and Hutch, mm-hmm. Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, those were my kinds of shows. I'd never known that a TV show could actually give you a message, or at least not one as powerful as Star Trek. So when I was so raw at this memorial service, hearing these stories and listen to this gentleman read this letter from the man that you speak of, the fact that Star Trek could have touched someone's life in such a profound way and inspired them to see themselves and to see the future in such a positive way really blew me away. I mean, I generally don't believe in life-changing moments, but that is probably a life-changing moment for me. That was when I started to reflect on who my father was and what Star Trek was and what it was that was influencing these people out there. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really realized what the name Roddenberry meant. And it sounds a little egotistical to just keep saying Roddenberry. I give it that name because it came from my father, and that was his idea, his philosophy, and that's, I think, the backbone of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. That's why it's lasted almost 50 years. The sci-fi is good, but I think the messaging is what's really kept it around.
Well, isn't there a large, all the writers before they joined the show, they had to read his, 100 pages or whatever, with the Bible?
A writer's guide and a Bible. Yeah. And it's actually available online. You can find about anywhere. Yeah. And you can actually see the thought that went into these characters. I mean, even though things changed, you can see the foundation principle behind it. The term itic, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And that's just the unconditional appreciation for all things that are different, whether in form or in idea. And that's the backbone of Star Trek. Never be afraid of anything different. In fact, embrace it, because you will only gain by doing so.
So how many writers do you think over the years must have worked on it? It must be dozens and dozens, right?
Definitely. Definitely. A lot of writers with all varied experiences, yes.
They must have been.
So your documentary was in part about you trying to discover who your father really was?
Yeah. I mean, just coming to terms with who he was, understanding who he is, and then the Star Trek phenomenon in general. You know, what is it? How can these people who've just seen this TV show be influenced or affected in such a massive way? Because I've heard some amazing stories.
So now there's Star Trek conventions and Comic Cons. You've been to both, right? So
yes, definitely.
So when you went to your first Star Trek convention, you know, after your dad's memorial, that must have blown you away a little bit, right?
It did. It did. I was still young. I was still pretty raw. In fact, you know, after he passed away, it was right when I was going to college. So I went to the East Coast for college. So I kind of left the whole Hollywood world for a while and got to sort of experience my own life and maybe find out a little bit about who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came back, I dove into it head first and worked on a TV show called Earth Final Conflict in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
figuring it would be a great experience to learn. Mm. And it certainly was.
Hmm. Where'd you go to college, by the way? Just curious.
A very small college in Massachusetts,
Williams?
Called Hampshire College.
Hampshire?
A very small liberal arts college. But it was phenomenal because I'm not a big fan of people or things that are say it should be done this way. I like the term right now is disruptive innovation. Mm-hmm. Anyone who takes something, turns it on its head and said, how can we approach it differently?
Mm-hmm.
Hampshire College is one of those schools where they didn't have tests or grades. They had divisional exams and they had evaluations. So instead of getting an A, B, C, D, whatever, you got sort of a couple paragraphs about mm-hmm. your strengths and your weaknesses and where you need to improve. And that was perfect for me because I was not the best student. The divisional exams were giant essays, which I did not like doing, but, you know, it was a great school.
Wow. That's an innovative approach, evaluating students'
work like
that.
Yeah, there's a few universities that do that.
Right. So. It's not one of a kind, but it was new to me.
Yeah.
So then, you took up this film, Trek Nation, took you about 10 years to make, right? I mean, it was,
it took 10 years, and I'd love to say it was 10 years of hard work and labor and learning. It was 10 years of making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, I take full responsibility. We went on a lot of different paths and had to course correct because it's hard to see the forest through the trees. When you're trying to sum up the history of Star Trek, a man's, you know, life and a son trying to search his father into an hour and a half, 90 minutes.
Well, you've got all that extra archival footage, though. Maybe there's another film
we could do another film.
See, you're a whole series,
out.
Right?
We could.
I think that'd be great.
That'd
be a good idea, so... Anyway,
I hear Mason Williams
yes,
in my headphones.
We had Dickie Smothers on for an hour a couple weeks ago.
Classical cast.
We play this every week, and we have to take our break right now. I'm sorry, folks. We'll be right back with Rod Roddenberry right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with our last segment with Rod Roddenberry, and... we've got to tell you about all his foundation, his philanthropic work, and all his recreational work. So where do you want to start, Rod? You go.
Happy to jump right into the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So the foundation, we started back in 2010. And the idea was to really carry on my father's vision in a more tangible, real way. Dare I say Star Trek's not real. Star Trek one day will be real. At least hopefully that society will be, or that world will be. But what we want to do is we essentially have four pillars. We have science and technology, humanitarian advances, education, and the environment. And if you think about it, they really touch on each other and they mm-hmm. cover every aspect. What we're trying to do is trying to create that future. We're trying to give grants and support people who are working towards the long-term benefit of humanity.
Like stem cells and Craig Venter, right?
Exactly. So the main thing is that we don't want to put Band-Aids on problems. It's very important to work in the here and now and take care of the needy right now. That is just not what our foundation is. Our foundation is working with people who are looking 10, 20, 50 years down the road because these technologies are going to be essential when we get to that. And one of the most interesting people we've talked to just recently is with synthetic meats, lab-grown meats, which is fantastic. I'm sure people out there have heard about this, but my wife and I just had a meat chip synthetically grown in a lab.
Really?
It didn't taste bad at all.
And it didn't take 50 gallons of water to grow either, right?
No, this is probably not the most environmental chip we've ever had. This was a very expensive chip to make.
I'm sure. Wow.
But as the process gets more refined, the costs can come down. And yeah, I mean... Listen, I'm a hypocrite. I am against killing of animals, but I love my hamburgers. So I want to live in a world where I can eat my hamburger and we don't have to slaughter animals.
Well, I did see Soylent Green. I don't know if you want to go there either. And you're a diver, right? You started up a group that you take people out on dives all over the...
We have the entertainment side, we have the philanthropic side, and we have the adventure side. You know, for years, people have watched Star Trek from a couch, and they've said, wouldn't that future be great? Wouldn't that be, you know, something to live in one day? And part of what we say is, hey, well, let's get off the couch and start making that happen. Why don't you get out there and see the world, you know, to steal a line from Discovery Channel, you know, go out there and you know, make that world a reality. Go out mm-hmm. and find some adventure.
Make the science fiction nonfiction, basically.
Right, right. So we go out there and we try to have sort of an environmental, or at least a philanthropic sort of message to each event we do. So we either bring along a scientist or someone sort of experienced in wherever we are, mm-hmm. and they tell us about what it is, why it's so special there, or what it used to be like, or what we need to do to preserve it. Mm-hmm. We try not to beat people over the head with a message or education. It is about having fun, but it's really about having new experiences, getting mm-hmm. new experiences. And they can be anything from, you know, safaris in Africa, which we haven't done yet, to just walks on the beach. Mm. We just want to get people out in the open. Sort of what you were saying earlier. Just,
yeah, the key is to get off the couch.
And, you've done dives out here off of La Jolla Shores, right?
Yes, yes.
And then are you here for the zoo this week? And there's something coming up this week or the next few days?
Yeah, the San Diego Zoo has their food and wine festival. Mm-hmm. So we find other fun events going on and mm-hmm. we kind of sort of say, hey, everyone, you know, come out and join us here.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rod, you've got a child of your own.
I do.
Fairly recent addition.
Yeah, he's almost 14 months old. His name is Zale, Z-A-L-E, which means power of the sea in Greek. I mean, my wife and I are huge ocean lovers, avid divers for many years, and so we found a name that we thought would be appropriate for him.
So he's running around a lot. Huh?
He's been moving for quite a while, and so I'm getting my exercise finally.
Do you have a plan to get him acclimated with... you know, the family history at some point when he's older?
Well,
you know, I think I can't say I know how to be a parent yet. I'm learning what it's like to be a parent. But the kind of parenting I think I want to do is let him sort of make a lot mm-hmm. of his choices. Mm-hmm. I'll introduce him to as many experiences as I can, and whichever ones he gravitates to, I want to encourage.
Yeah, my kids are 23, 22, and 18, and I haven't figured that out yet either. So don't feel bad.
Any advice?
No advice.
We only have a little bit of time left. I know you wanted to mention Dr. Sylvia Earle. She's a friend of yours, a renowned oceanographer, and has this film out, right? Mission Blue?
Yes, she's got a great documentary called Mission Blue. I've met her a number of times. She's an incredibly brilliant woman who really is she's been pouring her heart and soul into making this planet a better place for years, if not decades now. So she is someone that I have tremendous respect and admiration for.
Well, maybe we'll get that film down here pretty soon. So, but anyway, Rod, we want to thank you so much for being our guest. That's just been just flew by the whole
fun
hour.
Fun stuff. Very
thank
much
you for having
appreciate.
Me, guys. That was awesome.
And we wanted to thank Eric Rubalcava for being our sound
Happy
engineer.
Happy birthday, Eric.
Happy birthday. Richard, good seeing you. Thanks to Craig Blanker, account executive, and to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. You have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time on It's Your Money, Your Life. Go to iymoney.com for all the podcasts commercial free. Good night now.